While we've been focused almost entirely on what's happening in the west of China, on China's western frontiers, because those abut our frontiers in Ladakh. In fact, much more important things from the global perspective are going on China's east. That is looking at Hong Kong. You could look at Taiwan also. That is another story that we are not talking about today. We are talking about Hong Kong now. So much is happening in Hong Kong. Xi Jinping has decided to pass a law, or the intent to pass a law, in his National People's Congress at its two-week session, which is also a two-week summit, which is also sometimes called two summits. Chinese have interesting names for everything. So at two summits, he passed a resolution in enabling the government to draft and pass a new law, a national security law for Hong Kong. And that has got the world in a tizzy, because Hong Kong still remains a very important global center for trade, economy, business. And the whole Western world thinks that they let go of Hong Kong in exchange for certain commitments from China, and they owe it to the people of Hong Kong, nearly a crore of people, to ensure that China is held to those commitments. Obviously, you can now see that Xi Jinping has no intention to keep those commitments. There's been a sharp reaction. Mike Pompeo, the US Secretary of State, he has said that after this, we simply can't believe that Hong Kong is an autonomous territory as we had considered it so far. The immediate implication of that is that Hong Kong then loses the free trade status that it has with America. So Hong Kong also comes under the same tariffs that are applied to goods and services coming in from China. And there will be many other consequences also. Similarly, US, UK, Canada, and Australia together have issued a joint statement criticizing China's action. And this statement says, China's decision to impose the new national security law in Hong Kong lies in direct conflict with its international obligations under the principles of the legally binding UN-registered Sino-British Joint Declaration. And it undermines the one country, two systems commitment or framework. Now, what is one country, two systems? One country, two systems, I don't know who exactly came up with that line. Once again, as I said, the Chinese come up with interesting short pithy formulations like two summits for 2 weeks, one country, two systems. So one country, that means all of China is one. So when India signs up with China on one China policy, accepting one China policy, it means all China is one. But within that, because Hong Kong was to be taken over from the British by the Chinese in 1997, when the 99-year lease granted by the Chinese to the British in 1898 ended, by that time Deng Xiaoping had produced this idea of one country, two systems, because everybody thought, what will happen if Hong Kong comes under the Chinese system? Then the business and economy and trade and the creativity of Hong Kong will collapse, and Hong Kong will cease to be whatever it is. Because what is Hong Kong? It's a tiny island with a little bit of peninsular land on the other side, on what is called as the Kowloon side, and very creative people and a very creative, low tax and very free environment. And so it's become an engine of creativity, growth, business, economy, everything. So to preserve that, China devised this system, and the Chinese and the British agreed. A little history to that is that these negotiations had started in 1980 in anticipation of 1997. Deng Xiaoping actually at one of the meetings, and these are all recorded, archived conversations, told Margaret Thatcher that if he so wanted, he could walk in any day and take over Hong Kong by the afternoon, by lunchtime. So what was the big deal? And Margaret Thatcher said, yes, you can do it, and I can do nothing to stop it. But you must know that then the whole world will know what China is about. Now, that was an interesting point and a good argument that she made. It does look like right now that Xi Jinping doesn't bother what the world thinks about China, because he thinks China has become now much bigger than it used to be. And you know what happens is that you have one visionary who starts building a nation, builds it to an extent. Then there are a couple of others after him who take this forward. Then one odd enjoys the benefit of that. And then comes somebody who begins to use the power that the visionary may have built. And that's when problems start. And that's what we see Xi Jinping doing now. Because Deng Xiaoping and some others after that, after him, have built this power of China by keeping stability, by reassuring the whole world that the rise of China will be peaceful. And now you have Xi Jinping who says, look, what is all this power worth if I can't make use of it? And there is a great feeling in China that ultimately China has to restore to itself all the territories that Qing dynasty in the 19th century may have ceded to Western powers. So this is one of those. Taiwan is not part of those. Taiwan is a different history, and we'll talk about that at some other point. So that's why the reaction from China to these Western protests has also been quite sharp. So Li Jianzhao, our favorite, until not long ago, he used to be Muhammad Li Jianzhao. He's an Uyghur. When he was in Pakistan, he started using Muhammad with his name. It's a factoid and an aside. Then the Chinese banned 29 Muslim names in Xinjiang, including Muhammad. So he dropped it. So anyway, Li Jianzhao said, Hong Kong is China's Hong Kong, essentially meaning thereby that we can do what we want. You can go to hell. He also said that if Americans and Western powers take measures against China over Hong Kong, so will China. And what those measures could be, he did point out that America has a lot of business interests in Hong Kong and a lot of trade, etc., etc. So that is where that state of play now remains. So what is this national security law that everybody is exercised about? Now, a law has not been fully drafted yet, although we know the contours of the law, but Chinese People's Congress has now voted the intention to pass such a law and has empowered the government to draft it. And this was voted, don't laugh, and I will tell you why you shouldn't laugh, why I'm saying you shouldn't laugh, that it was voted 2878 in favor against 1. 1 opposed it. So I'm saying don't laugh, not because 2878 voted for it. You would expect that in the Chinese People's Congress kind of parliament, which is a rubber stamp parliament, in one party rule. But I said don't laugh because 1 voted against it. So we'd like to know who that worthy is, but we can't because this voting is supposed to be anonymous. 6 abstained as well, which is again not so important. So what is this law? What will this law do? This law basically says that China's national security law will now apply to Hong Kong, which means whatever, now this is a quote from a scholar that I have from Johannes Chan, who's a former law school dean at Hong Kong University, who says that China's national security law basically covers whatever Beijing wants it to cover. The last thing we want is for Beijing's mainland laws to apply to Hong Kong. How these will work, I will explain to you in 1 second. First of all, the first thing it does is, it says that it criminalizes anything that it describes as subversion of state power, cessation, organizing or carrying out terror activities. Anything can be described as terror. Terror activities endangering national security. Also, activities interfering with the internal affairs of Hong Kong Special Administrative Region, Hong Kong HKSAR as it's called, or colluding with foreign powers. Essentially, this also means, this legislation, that once this comes through, then the Chinese government and its security agencies and its intelligence agencies can start functioning formally and openly in Hong Kong. Right now, they do it undercover or they do it clandestinely. But once this comes in, then they can do it as they want. The Western powers as well as critics in Hong Kong say this is violative of basic law, Article 23 of basic law. What is basic law? Basic law is a mini constitution that's been designed for Taiwan to give it, to justify or to give a structure to the one country, two systems principle. So China has one way of governing itself. For Hong Kong, there is a special constitution or constitutional dispensation called the Basic Law. In fact, the Chinese had started debating about this Basic Law kind of legislation or constitution in the 70s, hoping to apply it to Taiwan and thereby attract Taiwan to rejoin the mainland. That didn't happen. This was applied here. So Article 23 says that Hong Kong government will pass a law, that's Hong Kong's own government will pass a law against treason, secession, sedition, subversion, activities against Chinese government and state services. Now, the fact is that no Hong Kong government's been able to do it. The earlier Hong Kong governor, Tung Chee Wah, tried to pass this law in Hong Kong in 2003. That met with stiff protests right away. And as it met with stiff protests, he gave up. He did not push it. And because he did not push it, it fell by the wayside. His three successors did not try to push it. Then came the Hong Kong democracy movement that we saw earlier in the year, or several months back. And that's when people came out to protest, and there was a widespread feeling that the Chinese were going to send in troops and there was going to be Tiananmen Square kind of situation in Hong Kong, but that didn't happen. The Chinese kept their patience, held their fire. At one point, they basically let go. And the whole world from outside might have seen it as a capitulation by the Chinese authorities and a big victory by the Hong Kong democracy agitators. But knowing the Chinese, those who know the Chinese better knew that the Chinese have decided to cut their losses at that point and to wait for a more opportune day. Now, that is what Xi Jinping seems to think, that his opportune day has come. So what will happen when this law comes in? And why are the Hong Kongers worried and why are they protesting? Because protests are now breaking out. Riot police has been called. There's a lot of tension in the air. So Hong Kong was guaranteed an independent judiciary under the Basic Law. Once this law comes in, essentially Chinese criminal, mainland criminal law will apply to Hong Kong. It also means that judiciary in Hong Kong can be instructed by the Chinese government to take a certain kind of actions when it comes to what they see as issues of national security, sedition, subversion, colluding with foreign powers, etc., etc. Similarly, this provides Chinese security agencies to work openly in Hong Kong. Now, they don't need to be undercover, and thereby it violates the Basic Law. So Beijing can now officially set up what is called as Ministry of State Security, which is the Chinese external and internal secret service intelligence agency combined in one. This was set up on the same structure as KGB in the past. So today they are all undercover. Tomorrow they can work as in the open. And Chinese criminal law is quite tough. The Chinese don't release figures. But if you check out Amnesty International or any other organization that keeps track of death sentences around the world, China is the world champion in executions, death sentences by a very long margin. Saudi Arabia and all have been left behind by a very long distance. So you, the Hong Kongers don't want this to come in, and particularly people in Hong Kong who might have foreign passports or dual passports, they obviously would not like such a thing. And chances are that if this comes in, a flight of talent and people will start. That's why this British threat that they will issue 3 lakhs and more long-term visas to people from Hong Kong, because 3 lakh Hong Kongers leaving out of nearly a crore or 90 lakhs doesn't hurt China so much. But these might be the most talented, the most creative, and also the most entrepreneurial Hong Kongers. So this is like vacuum cleaning your brain power from Hong Kong. That is the threat that Dominic Raab, the British Foreign Secretary, held out. I am not sure how much the Chinese will bother about that. Chinese will think that somehow things will fall into place and they'll be able to handle it. So Chinese official Wang Chen, he spoke at NPC, National People's Congress, and he said, when needed, when this new law empowering the Chinese government to pass the new national security law and apply it to Hong Kong was passed, he said. When needed, relevant national security organs of the Central People's Government will set up agencies in Hong Kong. Xinhua reported this. I am quoting it from there. So that is how this big change has come about. Now, a couple of questions arise. Why is Xi Jinping doing it now? Obviously, when he pulled back and when he let go while facing the democracy movements in Hong Kong, he was buying time. He was abiding his time. Why has he chosen this time? This is when, here is some guesswork from me, educated guesswork. Number one, this is now just about 150 days from American elections. So America is fully in the election mode. So like any other democracy, its ability to do something really decisive in these situations is very limited. Also because America itself does not have any consensus within the country. It's a very polarized situation. Second, American power, as Xi Jinping will see it, is at its weakest in a very long time. Donald Trump, he's gone around saying, threatening to undermine everybody else's power. But in a sense, he's ended up undermining America's power and its allies' power. So China also knows that American allies are all feeling unwanted now. And this is not just Britain, Europe, Australia. It's also Japan, Singapore, even Australia, countries in China's front yard. So these countries are dreadfully scared of China, and somehow so far they saw the American presence as an American security umbrella. With Trump threatening to send bills to Europe and Japan and South Korea, etc., that situation is now changed. And similarly, I'm connecting the two. Similarly, the Chinese would see at India. Why are they pushing India? Because they might also think, look, you guys were joining the Quad, huh? What is the Quad if the Americans are not fully committed to it? You were making a mistake, relying on the Americans, calling yourselves strategic allies of America, because what do you get from America? And if you look at Donald Trump's tweets and his statements, offer to mediate, arbitrate, it would seem that Xi Jinping is vindicated by what is happening there, because Donald Trump has not spoken out like an ally. And India should not feel particularly unwanted, because that is the state of all of America's allies. So that is one reason. The second reason is that Xi Jinping is now very strong internally within his own party, but once in a while there are challenges. So this is his way of consolidating his power and saying, look, I am now carrying forward the job that history, that we owe to history, to China's history. So I am doing it. Other people haven't done it before me, since Deng. So I am completing that job. Third point is that Hong Kong's economy. In 1997, Hong Kong was like the engine that was driving China's economy. Much has changed in 23 years since then. Now China is the engine driving the world's economy. So that equation is completely changed. So Hong Kong's economy is not small. Hong Kong's GDP is about $380 billion. It is not small change. $380 billion for comparisons is bigger than Pakistan. So you take Pakistan, add Sri Lanka, add Maldives to it for some fun, you still have a few billion dollars to spare from 380. So Hong Kong is that large, with about 4% of the population of Pakistan. Hong Kong is less than a crore of people. Pakistan is 22 right now. But compared to China, it's now very small, because China is $14.1 trillion. That's five times, say, India's economy. So China thinks it's now so big that it can afford to take a few risks with Hong Kong. But there is a fourth reason, which is important. And it's also quite clear that Xi Jinping thinks that that risk also is not so real, because the Western world will soon accept this new reality, because they have a greater vested interest in the economy of Hong Kong than even mainland China does right now. So that is where we stand right now, and that's where Hong Kong stands in this larger global equation now. So just one more thing before I let you go away. Yesterday, in episode 482, I had displayed a mask and I said that one of our readers, S. Kiran Reddy, sent this from Hyderabad. It came from Hyderabad, not from S. Kiran Reddy. It came from Dinesh Hansraj from Hyderabad. S. Kiran Reddy was the gentleman who brought it to us. So thank you, Dinesh Hansraj, for sending it to us. And thank you, S. Kiran Reddy, for bringing it to us. It's because of readers like you that we feel so encouraged to go on day after day, minute after minute.